Chris.
And this is Ryan.
And this is the Nintendo Show, the best damn Nintendo podcast on the internet. This is the first show of the month for November 2022. Usually we talk about Pokemon on the first show, but we're going to hold off on any Pokemon talk until Scarlet Violet come out. So we're going to pivot immediately to the mini show. Any topic goes. I got some games on tap. You guys got any games on tap?
I got one and... No, I can't really discuss that. I only played that for like an hour, so I can't really discuss that one.
Well, you use proper nouns. Which one?
Again, I can talk a little bit more about Mario and Rabbids, because I played more of that. And then I played an hour of Little Nightmares.
I do want to hear about Mario plus Rabbids.
Yeah. But I'm only an hour in Little Nightmares, so I can't really say
We've talked a lot about Little Nightmares.
Yeah, it was noted Little good Nightmares. Game. If it's still on sale by the time you hear this, grab it, because it was Little Nightmares 1 and 2 for $20, which is... more than worth it for that game.
Yeah, that's a sweet spot.
$40 for just Little Nightmares 2 is absurd, in my opinion.
Well, that's why you kick us off with Mario plus Rabbids.
Oh, all right. Yeah, I wasn't even... I forget where we were last time. There's just a little bit more to add to it. Like, new characters that they have in this one. I unlocked Mario Rosalia.
Rosalia?
Rosalia, whatever.
Rosalina.
Rosalina.
Yeah.
Rosalia's Pokemon.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then I've also... evolves
into Roserade.
Yes.
With a Leaf Stone.
Mm. I've also unlocked Bowser. So those are the two more I unlocked. I don't know if there's any more. I think that's it. If I had to guess, I could be wrong. But they're both really good. And the unlocking these guys had some pretty interesting missions. I really like this game and how creative some of these missions are getting with some of the objectives. Like the... the mission to get Rabbid Rosalina was a long one. It was a 3-stage. I just had to beat this one unit 3 times, essentially. But like the stage would reconfigure, and then you had to chase him down again and deal with other obstacles and stuff. But I really like in how much this game is kind of mixing up the same kind of objectives while throwing little odd stuff here and there.
They ever make you do an escort mission? Because in the first one, you had like those Toad escort missions.
Oh, yeah. Not really. There was one where they had to get a bomb across a map to blow up a barrier. But you did that by flipping switches and turning on like these statues that blew wind. And it kind of just blew the bomb around the map.
Okay.
So
it was more of like a puzzle solve rather than, well, could like an enemy
you could
destroy
still,
the bomb?
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Like it still could take collateral, and then it would, there would be one that spawned at the beginning of the map every turn. And so if you blew one up before it got to the barrier, you had to wait for the other one to get there.
Is there any sort of like grading system to the missions, or is it just like you either finish or you don't?
You just finish or you don't, and that's it. Like it really doesn't matter. Like the missions where you just reach this point, it doesn't matter how many enemies you take out the way, take out, you just get to that point, and the second you land there, you're done with the mission.
Do they give you like a turn count or anything?
I haven't run into any that's like completed in this amount of turns. The only ones I've seen is survive this amount of turns, and some of those have been kind of tricky.
Those are cool kind of missions, though. I kind of like those.
Yeah.
Like, they're like...
just kind of turtle in a corner or just keep moving.
Yeah, like there's some like RTS length StarCraft... in particular, had a few missions like that where, like, here's your timer. You got to keep on. You got to stay alive until the timer expires.
Mm-hmm. They had one boss mission that I like, and I'm going to spoil this boss mission because it's obvious how to do it right from the very beginning the second you see it. But it was this big, like, muscular rabbit thing. It was the Bowser mission, and it was in a circular area that was cut off into, like, 4, like, pizza pies kind of thing. And on each of them, in the middle of those slices, so to speak, were like these weird, and when you hit her, she slammed the ground, and so you wanted to get her and she moved towards you, so you need to hit her to draw her towards you, and then you need to hit her again for her to stomp the ground and set off the bombs, and that part of the map would be gone, and so you had to move to the next part. And that was a pretty cool mission because he was just circling around this map, just guiding this enemy around while dealing with other little ones here and there. And that was a pretty cool one. But, I mean, it's a fun game. Bowser's handy because Bowser does like a big AoE attack that can destroy obstacles. So you can blow up cover so you can get at enemies and stuff like that. His ability is weird. It spawns those little You saw them. They were, what are those things?
Those little like turtle chopper things, like from Mario World.
That you would stomp on and throw up at him when he swung around. He spawns those, which they will run to the nearest enemies and explode, which so far they're really more of a hindrance because if they can't reach the enemy, they won't blow up and they'll just kind of be there. And it's really easy to, if the enemy's too close to you, it will blow up on an enemy. And then they will catch burn, which will cause them to run.
Yeah, they'll ignite, which sends them like darting around in different directions. It kind of,
which if they do that and then run into you, they're going to ignite you, and now your unit's not in cover because it's running around.
It'll fuck up your positioning. Like, is he a tanky enough character to where like if he's wanting to fuck around, you could drop him in the middle of a bunch of enemies, send those things loose, and just let chaos ensue?
I believe so. I mean, I haven't put anything in HP because there's skill trees and the first tree has health. I don't typically do that because I haven't run into big issues where I'm like I don't have enough health. Like I'm just now doing that because I'm kind of filling out the rest of the trees. Or if I still need some points for another one, I might as well invest them in this.
Yeah, you gotta get your carbos, so I can refund everything.
It's all like that. I don't know, there's a lot of little things in this game. It's a lot of fun. I definitely do recommend this one.
Yeah, we were just watching you play through a mission a few minutes ago, and I was really impressed by, like, they allow you to do so much stuff just in any given cycle of turns. You can swap between characters, like you have your range of movements, you can like jump off each other and keep on chaining together these jumps to progress really far. And like not only do you have like your jumps and your movements, you have got like a couple of different actions you can do per turn. You can get a lot done in just one cycle.
It's kind of crazy. So your units have your basic movement. They can do one team jump, one dash attack, and then two actions.
Are there any? I remember in the first one, Mario could like chain together a bunch of dashes.
Like Edge, in his skill tree, you can unlock multiple dashes a turn. So he's a big throw him in the middle of people. Because his special attack that you can use, when you trigger it, the next enemy that moves in that space sets it off, and he'll hit all the enemies within range. It doesn't do a lot of damage, though. Edge, I find kind of useless. He does not do a lot of damage.
Yeah, that was one of the things about Mario in the first one. It's like, it was cool to be able to dash in all these enemies, but it was chip damage.
Exactly. Which in this one, they have those sparks, which are kind of like your weapons in this one. You can equip different two sparks, and each spark has a different ability that they contribute. Like one buffs your weapon with an elemental attack, one will do like an AoE attack around you, one will add an elemental damage to your dashes. So there's different kinds of strategies you can implement with different kind of guys.
Yeah, that would be kind of useful. Like if there's a bunch of enemies behind cover, you can dash into them with like a burn effect to like then just send them scattering from behind their cover. Are there like things that synergize that way? Because we talked about like Luigi being a sniper. Does he have like an Overwatch like he did in the first one?
His overall ability, because every unit has their like special ability, which has their own cooldowns, and you can in their skill trees. Some
cooldowns,
of them,
perfect.
Yeah, cooldowns, and then in their skill trees, they have you can invest points to lower cooldowns on some of theirs. But Luigi's and Mario's is the same. It's a big AoE that gets marked, and the first unit that moves in that area, they just hit.
Oh, interesting.
Okay. And then Luigi's last tier in his, it's earlier on Mario's, but unlocks multiple shots per use of that. So Mario will hit two different enemies. Luigi's just one right now. I have another unlocked yet. But there's a lot of cool combos you can do with stuff like that. Like if you trigger a burn on an enemy and they have that ability active, they'll dash from the burn and then set off Luigi's ability to shoot them, you know, things like that. Or there's enemies called Wild Claws that when you hit them, they'll move towards you, but they don't have a very big movement range. So they'll move when you hit them and they'll move on their turn. So you kind of have to like guide them around to whittle them down. So you could trigger that easily with Mario's and Luigi's thing.
Yeah, I think I remember something like that in the first one where there's big bulky enemies and I actually carried a shield to them too. And if I overwatch, I had someone set up with an overwatch when I shouldn't have, they'll move slightly. I'll shoot them and they'll gain an even bigger movement.
Yep. So there's ways to like guide that around and stuff. And then other units have different kind of combos to it. Like Peach has one where she'll put like a barrier on them that can take X amount of hits before your unit will start taking damage. And if you combo that with the Rabid Mario's, where he does counterattacks whoever hits him, you just put that on him, stick him in the middle of nowhere, trigger his, so people will shoot him, and then he'll counterattack. And that's just a cool little combo to do. Yeah, damage. There's a lot of little synergies in the game, and fun accidents that happen at times. You're like, oh shit, it was not... It's a fun little game.
Cool. Yeah. Very good. Ryan, you got anything on tap?
I don't know if this counts, because we have a retro show. I've been clocking a ton of hours playing Grand Theft Auto 3.
Nice. But you got that Grand Theft Auto collection.
I did, yeah.
How's it running?
Great. Really good. Oh, well, so here's the thing. It's a remaster. Mm-hmm. So they reskinned everything. Hmm. And I didn't realize that when I bought it. I thought it was just a bundle pack where I'd have all three games. The first three of the...
PS2.
The trilogy era of it. Yeah, like the 3 Vice City and San Andreas. But yeah, they reskinned everything. So it wasn't... At the same time, it's what my mind's eye probably remembers it looking like, but I know it's not what it looked like. It's a lot of it's a little too crisp from... It's mostly just skins, too. It didn't really change anything about the way the game runs. It's got that kind of delightful jank to it still. But yeah, they reskinned the whole thing. And I'm just... it's such a nostalgia trip. So much fun going back and playing the game. All of it's so much fun. And considering that the last game I just clocked, I think I was at something like 35. I beat Sinking City. I mean, at least I rolled credits, and it puts me back in a state where I can finish the side missions if I want. But it's like, in Sinking City, if I pick up a side mission, it's an hour and a half. If I pick up a side mission in GTA, it's 3 minutes. So delightfully brisk gameplay. And yeah, like just being in the open world again is so much fun. It looks great. It still has a retro feel to it, but it does look... The graphics are a little bit more crisp. The skins on everything are a little bit more crisp. Doing all of the fun little side missions that exist. Listening to the radio stations again. It's so delightful. What an incredible game. And like, even just like getting to the garage, there's actually there's three different garages in the game where they just have a big list on the wall and you just got to go collect the cars. That in and of itself is just such a fun little way to waste your time within the game. It's just being like, okay, wait, there's like four different kinds of cargo vans and they all look identical, you know, except for like, oh wait, no, but one's got the little mirror in the back and one's more of like got the boxy shipping container thing. One's got extra seats for people. It's like a minivan, you know, and it's great. I mean, that is such a weird little thing, but it's so delightful. The voice acting is great. And again, I'm only playing the third one. I'll play the other ones later, but right now I'm just like so soaking up GTA 3. Yeah, just getting a car you like and cruising around in the game is just therapeutic in a way. It just feels so nice.
How many altercations with law enforcement? Are you keeping a low profile?
Oh, I try not to engage with the police. Unless I'll do just because it's funny.
Just like in real life.
I'll get a cop out of their car. I'll just go up to a car and I'll just pull out my gun and I'll pop one bullet into their hood just to get them out of the car. And then I'll chase them around another car and then I'll run back to the police car and drive off with it. No, for the most part, I don't try to instigate the police. For one, they're tough. They'll keep coming after you incessantly. They really don't leave you alone unless you know where the stars are around the map that you can get to reduce. And it only reduces your star count by one. So if you get a full thing of stars, you're kind of fucked. And like,
are they like spaced out pretty sparsely?
What do you mean?
The stars to reduce your...
Yeah. They're not all over. If you had a full thing of, you'd have to drive all over the map probably to collect five different stars to reduce them. Or again, just get your car scrubbed. There's car cleaners that you just pull your car into, and they'll immediately remove all your stars. But it costs a little bit of money, and it's also, if you've got 4 stars, good luck getting there. Just good luck getting from where you are on the map to where the nearest one is. They can be, it can be pretty hectic. And typically the best thing a cop has is like a shotgun. Like, you get a shotgun just from getting into a cop car. Like, again, if you do that trick where you just pop their hood with a pistol and then chase them around, get into their car and drive off, you'll get a shotgun with like 6 rounds. So, and even then, that's not a good weapon considering the weapons that are available in the game. At any rate, yeah, there's just all kinds of, like, you'll just be driving around and then you'll just hear a cell phone. You'll hear a payphone. You're like, well, what's that? And you just stop and look around and there's a payphone. It's not listed on the map as being anything, but it has all these mini missions and stuff. So yeah, and again, they really are such a nice little bite-sized mission. No mission seems to take more than 5 minutes. So it feels very bite-sized, very easy to just string together a handful of missions. And they all have kind of fun little story beats, too. You like start off very heavily steeped with this Italian mob who are fighting like a Yakuza gang. Style gang in it. I know there's like three other gangs in it too. There's just all kinds of different like little hoods that have that different bad guys that spawn all over. It's so much fun. Very easy to die in the game. And each island you get a different garage to store your cars. As it is right now, I've only got a couple more missions even left as side missions on the first of essentially three islands. But I've unlocked the main island, and I'm going through there. Oh, but there's like boats and planes and shit that you can fly and drive around in on it. There was so much where I was like thinking, I bet I can only do that in Vice City, where I was like, okay, when you're driving around, you can shoot out the windows. It's like, wait a minute, wasn't that just a Vice City thing? And it's like, no, you can do it in this one. There's hidden ramps everywhere. Like some are obvious. Some will be like they positioned a bunch of plywood against a brick wall, and it's like,
okay, I thought you'd just been like in the street.
Yeah, that's the thing. There are kind of ramps that the game wouldn't expect. Like the big bridge, sort of the Brooklyn Bridge of the game that connects the two main islands on Liberty City, is itself a ramp, but is not meant to be one. If you just drive between the lanes on like the airflow vents, it's a giant straightaway. You can pick up so much fucking speed. And then, yeah, you've got this wonderful ramp that just launches you in the it's so fucking far. And the bigger the vehicle, the faster it can go, the better off it is. Mm. Like, I was doing it with 18-wheelers and stuff like that just to kind of see, just to wreck shit, just to create the mayhem, as is so delightful in this game. The game is so fucking great. I'm so glad I picked it up. It was like $29 for the triple pack. I see right now it's actually on sale on Amazon if you want a physical copy. I think it normally retails for like $49 or something.
Yeah.
Is it something like that?
I can't remember. 49? We sell it, but yeah. I mean, Target sells it. I do it. Yay! No. Target sells it. I can't remember.
It
goes on sale a lot.
Okay, yeah, yeah. It's $10 off right now on Amazon, as are a number of games. Like Diamond, Brilliant Diamond and Shining Pearl are $20 off right now on Amazon.
Wow.
If you didn't have it. So, fun fact.
A Pokemon game was on that cheap? That's weird.
Yeah, that's got to be like a retailer sale, because it's certainly not Nintendo who's putting that
thing
on sale.
They're not going to do that, yeah, exactly.
Like, why would we do that? We've sold 20 million copies of this. That's slowing down.
So that's all I got to say there. I have clocked at least a dozen hours playing this so far. Absolutely love it. It is such a great game, and it is very nostalgic. And one other game to talk about real quick, if I can pencil it in here.
Yeah, go for it.
Diablo 2 Resurrection.
Uh-huh.
Very good. Oh, God.
They had a recent new launch of a season and an additional item. They actually added a new item to the game on top of a couple of rune words, but I won't get into the rune word thing. But the new item that they added are called the Sundering Charms. So if you've played a lot of Diablo and you get towards the end of the game, meaning like hell, go ahead.
He's letting out a fart.
Yeah.
I should get that checked. It sounds very bubbly.
So if you've played, if you played Diablo, you'll know that Hell Mode is as it is described. It's very, very hard to get through unless you have unless you're well equipped with gear that would take dozens and dozens of hours to compile on a character.
Now, is it hard because they just throw more enemies at you? Do they like perform actions quicker? Do they just like have more HP that you got to work through? All of the above?
Combination of everything. Your character will feel very fragile.
Mm.
The characters that are actually kind of designed to be bulky deal piss poor damage unless they've got the proper gear to do it. You'll constantly just find yourself lacking of what you need. And then probably the single biggest obstacle that you'll get is that you'll see them sometimes in nightmare mode, but in hell mode, almost every monster that exists has an immunity. And you're like, well, that's fine. But most times you build a character, it's usually around one, maybe two types. And there can be, bad guys, especially elites, that have two immunities. So you straight up can't kill the thing. You, if you're a lightning sorceress and something's immune to lightning, you're done. You're fucked. Like, you just go away from that. Think of it as, it almost turns into like a horror game, like a survival horror game, where it's like, I don't have the resources to deal with this. I just got to get the fuck away from this and take out things that I know I can take out. So, like, for example, if you're doing a fireball, frozen orb sorceress, you know, you are going to try to toggle between those two. And if you find one that has both those immunities, you just go the other direction. You just get the fuck out of there. And again, like the same holds true for paladins and barbarians, of physical fighters too. There can be physical immunes, and those are maybe the worst, because if you get a physical immune, it is a wall you are not going to get through if all you do is physical damage. So at any rate, I say all this to be like, hell is for the high end gamers. Then they sort of, you know how to behave when you're in that, and you know that you just can't fight everything. You just have to stay away from things sometimes, and it's just not worth it. And stick to the parts of the map. It doesn't matter if it's Act 1 or Act 5. Stick to the parts where you know you'll be fine and you know you do stuff. Like, so a lightning, just, I know you guys don't know these places, but if you're a lightning character, a character that primarily deals lightning damage, stay the fuck out of Act 3. Just don't, like, there are entire regions of that map, or of that playthrough in Act 3, where everything is immune to lightning. It is a brutal slog to get through. So the item that they introduced, I say all this to get to the item that they introduced, it's these grand charms that you can carry in your inventory called Sundering Charms. And they have a huge benefit, which is that they remove an immunity, but they also come with a drawback, which will be like, reduces your resistance to that same type by 70%.
Hmm.
So they're only available in these new zones that exist called Terrorized Zones, where everything is 5 levels higher than it should be. So you get these charms, you put them in your inventory, and again, it's just a sort of gamble that you have to play. It's like, now I can finally break through the immunity of all of these things that I can't fight normally, but I'm now super weak to that thing. So if it's a physical immune and you can now break the physical immunity, good for you, but you're also going to take 30% more damage, like from physical attacks. So what it's essentially doing is that it's opening up the game, making it so that every area is now sort of playable regardless of your build, but it's also meaning that you have to be that much more cautious, and it sort of rewards players that kind of know how to handle a character. You can't just take a level 90 character with one of these things and be like, okay, now poison immunes are no longer a problem, I'm good, and then just instantly get sliced and diced. It happens. So very, very fun. I've got two so far. I've actually found two. Again, they only spawn in these terrorized zones, so they're hard to get. But I got one that's lightning, which is probably why I've been talking about it so much, and one that's poison. The two characters I've built so far is a sorceress and a Javazon specifically. And the Javazon is currently running the lightning charm. And while it still doesn't even do that good of damage against the lightning immunes, it can take them down. But I've also had to completely respec my gear to compensate for now being having 70... minus 70 lightning resist. It's stressful. It is the opposite of Grand Theft Auto. Grand Theft Auto is a delight, and it is a warm blanket of a game. And this one is just so harsh and cruel. This game is mean, but it's still very, very fun, and I love that they patched this new stuff into the game. Once I find better gear, though...
Gotta grind for that gear.
It's gonna be way better. It's gonna be way better. Oh, but my sorceress is fucking slaying right now. She runs a spirit sword and a spirit shield, so that's just great. And she got the skin of the Viper Magi as her armor, which is like the best armor you could run on a caster. So really just kicking the shit in of pretty much, like, she's the only character I can pretty much feel like I can safely go through all of hell with and just be like, wherever I am, I'm in charge. And that's even without the Sundering Charm, but that's because she's so...
Sounds like a romance novel. She's the only one I feel like I could go through hell with.
Yeah. That's true.
Yeah, there's a deep connection.
The gamer and the Amazon. Mm-hmm. I mean, we got something here.
Mm-hmm. So that's my gaming. Cool. That's all the gaming I've been up to.
Very good. I do have some things. Hang on, let's see where I want to start here.
Oh, the scroll unfurls. Oh,
God.
Item the first.
Oh, okay. So... Okay, I've got three games.
I like played that. That's good.
I played through Shovel Knight Dig. And in case anyone's unfamiliar, Shovel Knight Dig is a game with the Shovel Knight aesthetic, but it is like a it's a roguelite. If you were to make like SteamWorld Dig, I think we've all played SteamWorld Dig, right?
Yeah, I played them.
No, I've not.
Okay.
I think I have it, but I haven't played it.
That's a game totally worth playing. It's in show, so is Shovel Knight Dig, but I say play SteamWorld Dig first. It kind of gives you a good.
Oh no, I get the one. Space one. What was the space?
Oh, SteamWorld Heist.
That's another SteamWorld thing. Heist. I got that one.
Yeah, yeah. But it's the objective in both SteamWorld Dig and Shovel Knight Dig is you start at the surface and you're just going to dig down and. Fight some bosses. SteamWorld Dig is more of like a Metroidvania, where Shovel Knight Dig is just a straight up. You're going to get sent back to the beginning and lose all of your upgrades. And as you're digging through these areas, they're sort of randomly generated, but it's more like randomly compiled. It's not just all of the zones that you go into are just randomly thrown together by an algorithm. There are like specific rooms or sections of the game that you will recognize if you've gone through before. It's just they'll like mix them up into like what order you're going through. And like there are different like theme zones. They're kind of like your standard just underground area. And there's like lava areas and like all like factory type stuff. So you, as you progress through the game, like you beat a boss, you go through like the next one. This is like the you're kind of like predicting with some. So it's not, it doesn't feel random in the way that some other roguelikes would feel randomized. But as you're going through, you like go to these offshoot areas and there are shops and you can spend your cash to buy upgrades like to your health or different relics that will give you passive skills, like will draw all money to you. You can find something that will just give you a revive if you die. You can find something that'll give you a discount on other items in shops. You can find like a weapon salesman who will sell you upgrades to like a beam along the ground, like it was Legend of Zelda. When you're full health, your sword sends out a beam. All of these things, you find like secondary weapons, like projectiles that you can throw, or things that will bounce along the ground to that can hit enemies multiple times, and you can find upgrades to how many times that you can cast these things. But everything that you gain as you are playing through the game then gets reset when you die. There's nothing persistent, but it does let you keep, like in a typical Shovel Knight fashion, you do keep a certain amount of your cash. And when you dig again, you can find little satchels floating around and you can get some of your money back that way. The only real thing that you're spending money on when you go to back to the surface is you can buy different types of armor, and the different types of armor will do things like reduce your damage but also reduce the amount of money that you get. It can be aesthetic only. It can do things like increase the amount of damage that you're taking but increase the amount of money that you're getting too. And other than that, there's also areas in their gate in the game that are sort of locked behind doors, and you will find keys in random places, but at the beginning you can only carry one key at a time. However, if you could expand like the size of your capacity for carrying keys by two, so you can max out carrying three keys, and that's something else that you can buy. I played through the game a couple of times to completion. It took, you know, four or five times to actually make it through to the end, so it doesn't take too long to get through all the way. And of course it depends on how successfully or how lucky you're getting with the sort of item pickups that you get and when. So the first time I made it through all the way to the end is because I found a couple of shops that happened to spawn that time that greatly increased my health, but then also pretty much gave me like they called them shields, but like in Zelda you have your heart containers, and then like in Breath of the Wild, you know how you can get the yellow hearts, mm-hmm. the temporary ones. I got to a bunch of those, so I basically had three full rows of health, which carried me through to the end pretty easily because I didn't have to worry that much about taking damage anymore. Food that will restore your health can spawn. There are relics that you can get that make that more likely, and also like you'll reach sort of checkpoints. They're not like really checkpoints because you don't continue from there, but you'll reach like points of respite where there's nothing happening here, and your path will branch off and it'll have like little signs that will give you an indication of what you're like, hey, that's this sort of enemy, and there's also a higher chance of getting gems here. And on the other side, it's this sort of enemy, but there's a higher chance of food and health restorative items spawning here. So you kind of make that choice about which way you want to go. I probably would have liked this, and I thought this game was fine. I played through it a couple of times, like I said. I probably spent a total of maybe 8 or 9 hours with it over the course of like a week. So I got a good amount out of it. I probably would have liked it a lot more if there were some things that were pervasive. So if you felt like you had a run that you went through and you failed, you got to take something back with you. Just the money to buy different armors didn't feel like was rewarding enough.
Were the different armors at least different, or was this just like a cosmetic thing?
It was a cosmetic thing, and there were also some minor effects. But like being able to have things like persistent health expansions would have been really nice. Persistent like armor upgrades to make you more like defensive, or persistent like weapon upgrades so you're dealing more damage would have been really nice. There are things that you can adjust in the game. There's like a difficulty, it's like scaling feature. I call it the accessibility, where you can just flat out increase the amount of health that you have, or flat out increase how much damage you're dealing out with your base.
So you max those out. Got it.
I max it out in one of the runs that I did, but then that was the run where I ended up getting those huge health expansions. Like, well, I don't need that anymore, and turned it back down. wasn't even in there, and instead, like, keep them. I think that would have been like totally fine. I think that would have been super fine. Like, I would even have been willing to say like, if these things are persistent, like just like double the prices or something, you could actually make things more expensive. Because like, there was hardly a case where I'd come across a shop in the game and I didn't have enough money for it. I was like, go to any shop and like, yes, I'll just take one of everything, please and thank you, and then leave. There wasn't like ever any sort of constraint about like having to make a decision about like, ooh, do I want like this thing that will give me a discount in the future, or do I want the thing that's gonna like give me a +2 to my health? I just could get everything.
That's another thing that makes Hades such a great game, because you can purchase different upgrades for your weapons. And so you always had to like choose, like, do I want to burn this on this upgrade? You don't collect a bunch of them at once. Like, it takes a little bit of time to collect these upgrades.
It allows you to make a mistake.
Yeah.
And have to like learn things about the game. Like, there were times where, especially early on, I would run into a relic. I wouldn't even read about what it was doing because I would get them so often. I was like, okay, I got that thing again. Whatever. Let's just keep going.
Yeah. Where, like, Hades, like, those upgrades, are like, things you got were, you could spend them on things, like, around the place to unlock different things in the little chambers and stuff. That was cool for, like, cosmetic reasons and story reasons. But then there was, like, a lot of upgrades to help you with future runs so you could do it more reliably and complete it, which was a nice touch to like the roguelike kind of genre, or games like what was it, Dead Cells? The only thing you're really keeping is new weapons that you can start the run with, if I remember correctly. I didn't play a whole lot of that game because I did not like it.
Yes, you did. You didn't like it when you got to the end and kept losing.
Yeah.
I will play the tape.
That was the other thing. I did. That was why I couldn't get, I can't beat it.
If only there was a thing where you could go in and like max out the amount of damage that you're doing and max out your health.
I totally would have, because that game beat the shit out of me.
Well, yeah, like, I don't know. Like, I think Hades kind of did build the perfect version of what this could be.
Yeah, like Hades should be the building block for future roguelikes.
I think it really has to become that.
It needs to be, because they really did the formula right.
Oh yeah, of making it extreme, like. I remember like playing through it, and I don't remember exactly how many runs it took me to finally actually crack the case and beat the game for the first time. And then,
oh, it was a lot for me.
You realize there's this heat thing, so now it's just like, well, the game wasn't even hard. Now you got to turn the heat up. Now you got to intentionally kind of like limit yourself in certain capacities.
I still can't do the heat. Like it's still not a reliable thing that I'm making it to the end.
Yeah.
Like, I can't just say I'm going to make it to the end this run. Like it's still like I hope I do. Like,
rely, and there's certain ones you'll actually want to turn the heat up on. Like, doing the boss fights without the heat up just feels weird.
Do you get like more rewards if you turn up the heat?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, you get better payouts for those little resources that help you min-max your character. Like, there's this big mirror of sort of passives that and it's not just like it's like plus to health or plus to mana or whatever the fuck. It's like, it's changing the way that the items in the world work and then amplifying that. So very, very clever, because again, it's not necessarily making you stronger, it's changing the play style of the game. And then, like you're saying, you choose your weapon to start with, but the gods influence the weapons. And then you have augments on the weapons, and you can change the way that the weapons operate. So there's so much fun variability that occurs in those runs. Like, and I remember after having done literally 100 runs of the game, I just started a new file, and I was like, how long would it take me to actually beat this game with just a fresh save? It took me 4 attempts to actually beat the game. And that's like without even having unlocked the ultimate abilities, like the whatever it is where you have the big charge up thing with the...
Yeah.
I didn't even need it. Like, again...
The calls, I think they're... Yeah. Is that what they're called?
Calls.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So once you've played it enough, you kind of figure out
the... I can reliably make it to Theseus, but he's like my wall. Like, where he's generally my wall. And then depending on my condition after Theseus determines if I'm going to finish that run or not. He just beats the shit out of me. I'm so bad at that boss.
You just kind of got to run him around. You got to run. Don't try to engage him directly. And he's got... It's like with all these other guys. He's got patterns. You can read them. And there are some times where you can just truck him. You can just like... if you do certain builds in certain ways, he's
just certain vulnerable. Weapons are reliable for me. And certain weapons, I'm just like, I suck with this thing. Like, I...
Yeah. I was that way with the bow. I know a lot of people really like the bow, but for me... You know, we're not talking... We should probably be talking
it's
about...
It's a show. We can talk about whatever the fuck we want.
Yeah. Hades really is just a...
Hades is great.
Fantastic game.
And it seemed that game, from what I saw, but I only played it the one time, but it seemed to, like, strike a good balance between, like, resetting what you have, but then also letting you keep certain things that were just persistent. Like, right, I've now done this thing and gotten this upgrade, and now I just have it. And I think that's something that's important to this style of game, because I don't want to, like, play a game that I feel like, okay, now I'm starting over from scratch, now I just got to, like, run at this challenge again and hope I get lucky with getting good upgrades early on.
You might as well be playing, like, a Super Nintendo game where you just hit the reset button.
Right, and that's the thing. Like, there's that game, that tactics game, Into the Breach, that got a lot of acclaim a couple years back. And it's a good game. It's got a lot of neat ideas, like just sort of like a microcosm with these really small grids of a tactics game. But there's nothing that... Okay, there were very small things that you would take with you to your resets, and there were a lot of things that I read about this game where if you're not getting good upgrades super early, just bail. Just bail and start over. And I don't really like if I'm gonna start up a game and I want to do a run through, I don't want to like keep on resetting until I get the correct run through. I want to be able to start like, okay, this is what I'm gonna use. I'm gonna try to get as far as I can and hopefully take some stuff back with me. I don't mind like playing a game like Shovel Knight. Like, I failed 4 or 5 times before I actually got through it all. I don't mind doing that kind of thing so much, as long as every time I fail, I at least get something out of it.
Here's the thing, though. In Hades, though, if I started a run with Athena as my main and I didn't get her dash or her regular attack, I would bail on that run. I want her for those 2 fucking things, and that is it. I do not want her doing a cast or a special. I don't care about any of that. Just give me the attack. Give me the dash.
What's the attack on Athena?
It's just your standard attack, but it reflects.
Oh.
Just makes you unfucking stoppable.
Yeah.
Get the sword and just fucking dash teeth really first into every bad guy and watch him die. It's great. Nothing can touch you. It's delightful. Yeah, she pairs well with, like, Ares, who does the bomb burst thing. Honestly, Athena is just sort of, like, pairs well with fucking everybody.
Just because she's defensive. So. Yeah, it's just a nice, handy, reliable defensive thing. Ares, I really like with the shield, because you can get the thing where the special does the delay damage.
Yeah.
And you can just chuck it at people.
And let it kind of bounce around.
Yeah, exactly. It's just blanket the ground.
Then the shield kind of does not work well with, you know, like Poseidon or like Zeus. And that's a great combo, by the way. Poseidon and Zeus team up very, very well together.
Hmm.
But yeah, it's a...
It also depends on what weapon, which ones you want. It really depends on the weapon. Because you don't want something like Ares's or Dionysus's if you're doing like the bow that's doing slow hits. Because you want to get a lot of hits rapidly off on a guy.
There's one of the mods on it, which is actually kind of fun to play with, where you poke them once, and then your special, which is a spread shot, all of them will be heat seekers towards the target you hit. So if you are doing something like...
I don't think that's a mod. I think that's a
one of the weapon forms.
Yeah. That one's pretty cool.
So yeah, that makes it actually perfect to use with someone like Dionysus, who has a stacking thing. Yeah, that would be. With Demeter.
And that's the fun with the Hades. There's so many different builds and things to experiment with and see what works and everything like that. And then you have all like the...
I think they did like a really good job like showing you like, hey, if you use this weapon this time, you're going to get like some sort of permanent upgrade. Which is why, like, the one time I played, I went with the shield. It goes, well, I'm playing your file. I'll get you an upgrade if I just play with the shield. Mm-hmm. So, like, that's a good way of encouraging you, like, well, you could go with the one you like the most, or you could try something new and actually get something.
Every round, there's one of the weapons are highlighted to give you bonus stuff. So, that's...
Yeah. And they're all good in their way. It's just a matter of, you know, finding a build that really is going to make sense with the weapon you use.
And some you just suck with, like I do. I just really suck with which one? I think just the standard sword I just suck with.
Yeah, again, I think that's one that I found, like, I always thought the sword sucked until I started messing around with Poseidon builds. Mm-hmm. Poseidon really is great with the sword. And the sword is very much like a fucking just attack. Just go, go, go. You need to be charging at your opponents at all time. Some of them are very much like you got to read the battlefield and attack at the right time and coordinate. It's like that one. You're just like be in a different place as quick as you can. Don't ever be in the same place. Don't ever sit still and just constantly attack. And it seems to work out, honestly. Mm. Yeah, I mean, and I can guarantee you, I can just if there was no heat turned on, I could beat a run with anything. I feel like I could just give me the things. I played it so much.
Sounds like I should use the sword.
I just got good with everything.
Mash attack and hope for the best.
The pistols are actually really fun. I think the pistols are a really overpowered weapon if you get the right mods.
Plus you don't need gun thing?
Yeah, the gun thing.
Plus you don't need courage.
Yeah.
No, you don't need courage.
I don't need that one. You can leave that at home.
Yeah. What are you, Shovel Knight Dig? I thought it was pretty good.
We were talking about Shovel Knight Dig.
Yeah, there are some, like, they do hit you with, like, a lot of cool different, like, stage hazards and environmental things that that will change up on you. So it's not like you're running into the same things over and over again. The variety is good. There are going to be, like, times you'll go through, like, a couple different runs and not see much of the same things twice. I'd probably say, I think it's like $20-25. This game is guaranteed to go on sale at some point, so I'd say stick it on a wish list and keep an eye on it, because it'll be half off at some point. I think it's totally worth it to grab. But I've also been playing some of those Ninja Turtle collection games.
Oh, nice.
I have played through 2 out of 3 of the Game Boy ones.
Oh, cool.
And I also played through Hyperstone Heist. I don't think I mentioned this. That's a Sega Genesis Turtles beat-em-up, which is just kind of a remix of Turtles in Time. Maybe it's because it was on a different system, like other than the Super Nintendo, but if it wasn't like Konami making both games as well as the arcade game, I'd kind of like to say like this is just kind of an asset flip. There are like some different like stages, like backgrounds of like sewers and stuff, but you're essentially playing like the same bosses that behave in very similar ways. All of the turtles, like the sprites look very similar to the Super Nintendo Turtles in Time. So yeah, Hyperstone Heist, like if you've played Turtles in Time, you've essentially already played that one. I also finished off the NES one. Well, I was very close to the end of that one already. I abused the rewind because that game was just designed to kill you. There are parts of the game that are just instant death, and unless you've already memorized the order in which like you're supposed to drop down this corridor to keep from like the laser walls from closing in on you, you're going to die. You're going to take a death. And reviving turtles is not something that's easily done in that game. But it is like this sort of interesting take on like what a Turtles game as a Castlevania or a Metroidvania could be. But that idea never really got super fleshed out until... like there's a Game Boy game, the third Game Boy game, Radical Rescue, that kind of takes some of those ideas and does what they can with them on the Game Boy. But we'll get there in a second. So the first two Game Boy games are Fall of the Foot Clan and Back from the Sewers.
I believe those are the two I remember playing as a kid, and then I played them on this collection as well. The first one, if it's the one I'm thinking of, not good.
It's very much walk forward and punch.
And they jump at you at an angle from both sides over and over again, and it's sort of, how quickly can I move forward while hitting these two guys?
Right. And like, at what point do I reach the tile where it's going to spawn them in and kind of like edge my way up to that so only one of them comes at me and I can get the one who's coming from the other direction? There's not really too much of a variety of enemy types. There's not too much platforming going on the stages. It's just like this 45-minute walk forward and punch the enemies, and it was probably just fine to hand like a kid a Game Boy for a short car ride and say amuse yourself for a little bit.
Yeah, that one was pretty underwhelming, and I was a little like, oh man, this next one. But if the next one's the one I think it is, pretty solid.
Follow the Foot Clan.
Much improved.
It's got some better sprite work. The sprites are bigger. It has some better sprite animations. The turtles also behave a little bit differently. They'll have different range to their attacks slightly. But like a side-scrolling brawler, like a beat-em-up. Mm-hmm. It does have some more complex platforming to it than Fall of the Foot Clan, including like the fifth stage is like a maze. You remember how like in Super Mario Brothers 1 there are certain castle stages where unless you're like taking a certain path, you're not going to get to the end.
You go through the right path, yeah. Like it'll be a high, mid, low, and you got to do the right order.
Mm-hmm. And Back from the Sewers, stage 5 is like that as well. You have to like find your way through like this series of airships, like Mario 3, and to find like the correct order you're supposed to do things in order to actually get to the end of that.
Yeah.
Also, again, this very much like recognize the boss pattern. Like a boss will have like two or three different attacks that they'll come at you with, and recognize what they're gonna tell. One thing I will say is playing through the game as Raph is very difficult because
it's not a very ranged attack.
No range to it, and there is no way to like when you're fighting Shredder specifically, there is no way to pop him for damage and back off quick enough. Because when you pop him for damage, he'll immediately counter with a sword swipe, and Raph just doesn't have the range to avoid damage.
Yeah, and I don't recall there even being like a different speed of attack. Like typically, that's the thing that happens in these is that like, you know, Raph and Mikey don't have the range, but typically they attack a little faster, they move a little faster.
Mm-hmm.
But it just sort of makes it like, why wouldn't you just always be Donnie?
Right.
Because he's got the long bow, he's got pretty good range, and if
does a lot of damage.
Yeah, he's kind of moves the same. And if there is, I couldn't really notice a difference between playing them. But I just remember as a kid, I always went Raph first because I was like, that determined how good the run was going to be.
Mm.
If I could get through really, really far without losing Raph, it was going to be a cakewalk. I could probably win. If I had to use the best guys first, and there's nothing worse than like running out of mojo when you get to the final bosses and they're like, oh, I just got Raph left, or it's just going to be like Mikey, you know. And actually, Mikey's got pretty good range too, but I shouldn't say that, but you know, that's how I always like to play. This game actually was as good as I remembered. I think it's actually got a lot going for it. I think it looks great for a Game Boy game.
Yeah,
there's a ton of attention to detail in the sprite work.
Like four different sprites when you do a jump because like the turtles will flip around.
I mean, the backgrounds look cool. The bosses look cool.
The stages are
memorable. There's hidden items. There's all kinds of hidden shit all over the place if you just beat up the right stuff.
It's got like different types of enemies that will approach you in different ways. Like, this game is certainly a step up from the Fall of the Foot Clan.
Yeah.
The third one that I just started today is called Radical Rescue. And like I was saying before, this one is more of a Castlevania. So the sort of setup for this one is Michelangelo is the only turtle that you got, and scattered throughout this map are the other turtles who have been captured. And a lot like Castlevania, you have to like find the correct order that you're supposed to do things in order to start rescuing them, and eventually like get to the end, which is like rescuing April. So, for example, like Leonardo is sort of the first one that you're going to encounter to rescue. You have to find a key that will allow you have to get to a boss door, and the boss door, when you beat the boss, it will give you a key, and that key will unlock the door that has Leonardo behind it. And your turtles will have different skills that will break open different stage hazards, or allow you to pass certain things. So Michelangelo, as is logical, he is able to twirl his nunchucks above his head at like a helicopter and allow you to glide over stage hatches like spikes.
Yeah, that's just simple physics.
Yeah, that's how nunchucks work.
Yeah.
Leonardo, again, exactly how it is in real life. He's got his katanas, which will allow him to drill down into certain types of ground. It's indicated like blocks that are like cracked a little bit. When a block has cracks in it, you'll be able to drill in with his swords.
Yeah, that's why there's always a katana guy in construction sites.
Exactly. Exactly. We're on the same page here. And again, it's an interesting game because you know you're able to switch through these turtles like sort of on the fly, but you do have to open up a menu to do it. But you don't have to like be at a specific spot. You just like, okay, now I need to be a Leonardo to break through this thing. You can find different pickups like pizzas that you find scattered throughout the world aren't health restorative. They're phoenix downs. They're revives. When like a turtle dies, it will automatically revive you. You can only carry one with you at a time. There is a map in the game, but the Game Boy map doesn't display any information. It just like shows you all the different corridors or rooms. It won't even tell you like how the doors connect, because there are certain areas where you can only move through one way, and then it becomes blocked off. You have to circle back around if you need to go back into that area. The Cowabunga Collection does have an upgrade mode to the map where it will display some more information for you. It will display where like key cards or doors with turtles that you can rescue behind them, or like bosses. It'll actually show these things on the map, but still doesn't display like where all the doorways are. So it just kind of looks like a series of blocks, and you're not quite sure how they're connected. I think it's got some really neat ideas, and it's kind of a shame that Turtles games never really sort of revisited this type of Castlevania structure to the gameplay. They just kind of became beat ups, which are fine. Like, there's nothing wrong with Turtles in Time or Shredder's Revenge or any of these games. They're all really good. But you don't really see the Ninja Turtles try different gameplay styles.
No, they're action, not adventure.
It's not a Kirby.
Capital action, lowercase adventure games.
I think they could be, though. Like, because you do have, like,
They could also be fucking boring if that's what we're doing. I want to hit a Foot Clan in the face with a weapon.
I am trying to walk us to a place where we can have a turn-taking Turtles RPG.
Oh my god.
Because that's what I want.
Please don't.
There's an app that Ryan has that you can just play.
Oh, that's true. He's got that tactics game.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah, that game is fantastic.
See?
I got seven different kinds of turtles.
The Ninja Turtles are so fucking versatile as characters. They can fit all these different gameplay styles. I'm not saying we should stop having turtles beat them up. So we should still get those. But we should just have Ninja Turtles in every game.
Ninja Turtle Shooter?
Yeah, Ninja Turtle Shooter. Why not?
Try to make that work.
100%.
Ninja Turtle Dating Sim?
Yep. Mm-hmm.
If you want to date a reptile.
You can date April. You can date Casey. You can date Splinter.
Ninja Turtle Ace Attorney?
That's the first one. That's perfect. Michelangelo Ace Attorney.
Yeah, I like it.
But yeah, I obviously haven't finished that one yet. I'm gonna keep going through it. It's not, none of these Game Boy games are super long. Most of like the long play videos that I've seen of them are 45, 50 minutes. Radical Rescue probably take me a little bit longer because it's a bit more of like a tangled web to unweave. But yeah, the last game I got, fellas, is Bayonetta 3. I finished Chapter 6 today. I'm not quite halfway through it yet. Obviously, there are more than six chapters, but not 50% mark. I won't go too much further into spoilers than that. But you have your mainline chapters, but then there's also like little offshoot missions. So every chapter will have like little objectives. Like there's three little collectibles that you can find and like different achievements. They call them bewitchments in the game, but they won't like tell you what they are until you finish the level once, and then they'll tell you like, oh, do this thing, like climb to the top of this building or go through this section of the game without taking any damage by hitting lava, something like that. So they have some replayability there if you want to go through again. But just to kind of start at the basics here, it is an action game, a character action game, as they're describing it, what's like a Devil May Cry, or like how Old of God or War games were. But rather than having like Bayonetta 1 and 2, which is kind of like on corridors, you're kind of on rails, you would engage with some enemies in a big fight, and then you'd kind of run forward, maybe do a little platforming until you got to the next action segment. They've expanded the scope of the places that you are in a bit. It's not anything like open world. There are points of the game where like, okay, now you are gated off. You can't go back any further. You can only go forward from here. But you do get to some areas. And what you'll find like treasure chests that will have health upgrades. You can find things like, it won't like just take you from point A to point B to all your action segments. They call them verses in this game, but it's pretty much your next fight. Some are totally missable because there are the scripted ones that you have to do, and then there are the side ones. And they'll tell you like, hey, you've just done four, but you didn't do three. So sometimes you'll have the opportunity to go back and find that one if you want to. And finding the side ones is worthwhile because you'll get things like their heart containers or like mana increases that will just kind of make things easier to play through in the game, or you get like some cash out of it so you can unlock new maneuvers. And the game is very much a technical action game. You could like mash your strong attack and weak attack a decent amount of the fights, but unless you are like learning when you should dodge, when you're calling in your big demon attacks, how you're doing combos well, there are big bosses you're not going to be able to get through, and you're certainly not going to get good scores. And there's a scoring system, and that will determine like how monetary, like the economy of the game, how much reward that you're getting from each fight. It'll grade you like stone is the absolute worst, and like bronze, silver, gold, platinum, and then like pure platinum. It'll grade you on things like how quickly you're able to get through, how good your combos were, so you don't want to like repeat a ton of different attacks, and you don't want to have very many parts where you're not doing anything. You want to always be like engaging in some sort of combat. And then like the amount of damage that you're taking in each fight. So there are a lot of things like depending on like when you're doing a weak attack and when you're doing a strong attack, it will depend on the sort of combo that you're doing, when you're calling in your demon helper and doing like the big attacks with those. There are attacks that you unlock that are more like technical, like do a full circle and then this button and that'll unleash an attack, or like do a forward back and then an attack and do a different thing. And getting all of these things working well together will allow you to be dishing out more damage and also working up your combo score if you're interested in that sort of thing. So far, I haven't like encountered a part of the game where it's like you have to have a certain score in order to be able to proceed. It's kind of like lets you go through. But there are times where if you want to unlock a side mission, you have to find all the little collectibles within that mission.
Did they give you like a kind of a like a training room or a place where you can kind of just go in and start working on combos before you actually have to get into the fights?
Yeah. You can, I think through in the root menu, like in your level select area, you can go into a training room, and it's worthwhile to experiment with because you do get a bunch of different weapon types. So to start out, you're unlocked, you're just kind of like fighting fisticuffs, punching kicks, and you unlock pretty quickly like a big club. You can do some bludgeoning damage. And like in swapping weapons back and forth, you can have two equipped and quick swap back and forth between the two. Doing that will also help you put together bigger combos if you're using a variety of weapons. And you can also have like three of your demon familiars equipped to call them into fights to dish out some big damage as well. But then you can also like unlock these basically giant yo-yos, but they're blades, and you fling them out. There are some whips that you can unlock, and I just unlocked a new weapon. It looks like a spear, but I haven't messed around with it yet. Like, and the demon familiars like are really handy to bring in, because when you do a dodge in this game, if it's a well-timed dodge, like you just narrowly avoid taking damage, it'll put you into what they call witch time and put everything in slow motion except for you. And that's a good time to bring in your demon familiar to start unlocking or to start dishing out some massive damage. And they'll all sort of have like a disable with them as well. So there's a spider one who can cast out a big web and lock an enemy down so they can't move around. It's a good time to dish out a lot of damage too. And then there are ones that like bite the enemy and like fling them into the air. And when you hit an enemy enough times with these big demon familiars, you can unlock like a finishing move, so to speak. It doesn't necessarily finish off every enemy that you use it on, but it's like the thing that's going to deal the most. Press the button when you're prompted, and then it just gives you like this big not super long, but like a Final Fantasy summon sort of animation where you see like a torture device doing big damage to whatever the target is.
Nice.
And they're like really crazy bombastic animations, like the different attacks and the different like fight scenes and enemies, like really detailed, kinetic, high energy, really fast paced, like high octane thrill ride sort of thing, where these really acrobatic, nice looking things are being done, like really highly detailed things. And the game is kind of two different worlds, because when it's really focused in on the characters and the fights that they're doing, is very fluid, very smooth, very highly detailed, really impressive to look at. But then there are times where you're just kind of like out in the open world, and it's not bad looking, but it's not particularly impressive either. So
it's kind of like when you stop in a racing game and look at the environment around you, and it's like, this isn't as detailed as I would like.
Like in Mario Kart.
It looks better when I'm going 100 miles an hour.
Yeah, and you realize in Mario Kart, like, it's not a crowd, it's just a bunch of flat JPEGs, like, bopping up and down. And that they're, especially when it's just kind of basic scenery, like if there is a tank that's part of a cutscene that's just kind of like rolling. Impressive looking tank. It's not terrible. It's just nothing. It's not great either. It's a bit of a contrast to the rest of the game, where like they have like these detailed, grotesque, like enemy models, and then just something like basic, like a car. It's like, oh, that didn't look particularly great. The game. Speaking of the big bosses, like it seems to take some cues from like no, and it'll just change the mode of gameplay, and it's not like 100% like always on point, like always a really great fight. For example, there is one where it's kind of like this rock paper scissors sumo wrestling match, where, you know, the enemy will either like take a swipe at you, try to bite you, or block. And then you can do the same things, except you know, one is going to be effective on the other. So you have to like judge by their animation, sort of predict what they're going to do, and then do the thing that is effective against it. But it's not immediately like intuitive. Like, of course, a swipe is going to be good against a bite, and a bite is going to be good against a block. So it takes a bit to actually get used to that sort of fight. And those sort of like big sumo wrestling matches are it appears in some games at times, is never particularly great in my opinion. However, there is a boss fight, I think it's even like the next level, where, you know, you fight this big boss, and then immediately like a demon train rolls through, and you jump on the demon train, and then it becomes a shooter, and you have to like shoot the incoming debris, and then shoot like the enemy's hand as it's incoming to like take a swipe at you and get these counters that way. And it's this really fun segment, and I could have stood for that to be 10 minutes longer. It was really, really great. Were you looking at some fan art or even some in-game art?
I was just noting that on the cover of Bayonetta 2, center most in the image is her ass.
Yes.
And I noticed that the cover art for Bayonetta 3, surprisingly absent of ass.
Hmm.
Does she have a button this one?
She does.
Yes. Good. Okay. Yes.
Again, you know, I think in Bayonetta...
Zooming in on it.
in Bayonetta 2... Oh, that's your wallpaper now. Perfect.
Yeah.
In Bayonetta 2, there was like a...
I may have to answer some questions of your girlfriend, but...
a level of voyeurism that isn't quite as present in Bayonetta 3, but there's still some stuff there. And I don't particularly feel qualified to weigh in on whether this is... objectification or empowerment. There is some debate on if Bayonetta is a character that is objectified or is female empowering because she embraces that sort of side of her character.
A little calm A, a little calm B.
Probably. Probably. But, you know, I'm not one to judge. Like, it's a game, so I played it. And if this was a a dating sim with the Bayonetta character, I wouldn't have given a shit. Mm-hmm. There's a match three puzzle game with Bayonetta.
I think typically in action video games, it doesn't matter the gender of the protagonist, they're typically made to look good. Mm. So,
and most of the time, like, things are so frantic, not even paying attention.
Yeah.
Because there are times where like, the clothes do come off. When, like, the more successful you are with your attacks, they reward you with the clothes
coming off. Oh, why didn't you lead with this? Yeah, no, this is totally objectifying.
But when... but when the thing is, when you're doing, like, the big combos, you're so focused on what you're doing, you're not even noticing. Like, I did, like, a costume change, because you unlock different costumes. And the one that I put on was, like a basic pair of shorts and a jacket. I can't tell you one way or another if I'm doing big combos. I don't know if the clothes are coming off with that look.
I thought her hair was the clothes.
Right. And certainly, like, at the beginning of the game, of course, I noticed. When you're doing, like, the default costume, as you're, like, racking up the combos, the clothes are coming off. I don't know if that's the case. Maybe, like, changing the costume disabled that. I don't know. Because I haven't noticed.
Yeah.
But, yeah. Bayonetta 3. Big thumbs up. I'm really digging it.
Nice. By the way, I see that it is currently, for whatever reason, it's on sale.
Oh, good.
On Amazon. You can get a physical copy for $55 as opposed to the $60 you would typically pay.
You had me at clothes come off, so.
Yeah. Wes is in. He's abandoning Mario plus Rabbids.
I also think that she frankly looks a little bookish. She looks a little bit like a librarian, and I think it makes it even cooler.
I mean,
she
it is
to be objectified.
It is an interesting, is it an interesting character model. And like
librarians can be hot too, Ryan.
Because yeah. The character is quite tall, very long limbs. Would not like your typical like video game female protagonist sort of character.
Yeah.
Anyway, any other games we need to talk about before we move on here? Got anything else?
No, that's all I got.
No, I had a moment in... I'm just going to bring up Little Legends for a moment. Because it brought up like a PTSD moment with
Tell us what time we got now.
With Myst. Where I was in this... 15 minutes. I'm like, where the fuck do I go?
Did you have to close the door?
It was a door that I thought was closed, but it was actually open. Mm. So, you know.
Well done.
Can we complain about one thing, too, as well?
Yes.
Since we're complaining about things here?
Yes.
I just did this terrible mission in GTA 3, and then I got to the part where I was about to do it, and I was like, oh, fuck, I remember this. And it's so stupid, because the guy gives you 10 grenades, and he tells you you got to throw it through the window of this place, and it's just like some back alley apartment. And they give you space and room to throw it, but it's like... there's no good way to aim. They don't really tell you where you're throwing it. You just kind of have to line it up and hope you're right. And by the way, if you're not right, it's going to bounce off the fucking wall and go right back into your face.
Amazing.
And I remember, yeah, I remember being so pissed that this mission existed. And then I played it and I was like, oh, God. And I kid you not, I died 3 or 4 times. I don't think I died on a single mission. I've had some funny deaths that were not in mission, but this is the first time I actually like failed a mission. Oh, so stupid. And again, it's really weird because you're like, you have to have it at just the peak of your arc, and it's unclear where you need to stand to throw it, or if you're even really lined up correctly to do it. And even then, once you actually get it in there, the garage opens up and two guys with assault rifles come shooting at you. So it's...
Well, you got 10 more grenades, just...
I mean, well, so what I did... because I remember my old strategy, what I did is I actually parked a car in front of the garage. And I shot it full of enough bullets that it was smoking. So that way, like, when I actually did get it into the thing, to a submachine gun, and I blew up the car as he was trying to pull out with his car. And
well,
his
that's, car that's blew good up. Stuff. That's a good
and
strategy.
I won, and it was great. And everybody was happy.
Except for that guy's family.
Nah, he's a dirtbag.
Cool. Well, he's not going home. His wife and kids.
You guys want to get into the tier rankings?
I'm down if you are. Yeah.
Cool. We have 4 games or 4 series to put into tiers this time. We got Kirby, Chibi Robo, Splatoon, and Paper Mario. Actually, let's take a quick time out so I can go grab where our other tier rankings are at this point.
Cool. Let's do it.
Thank you. So, like I was saying, we got some already ranked into the tiers here. I'll go through. We'll start with the S rank stuff. The ones that we locked in right from the start, before we even started doing this, locked in as S tier. Legend of Zelda, Mario Kart, Mario, like the platformer series, Pokemon, and Super Smash Brothers. Those are our top tier, definitely S. No, under no circumstances would they get moved out. Donkey Kong is also in the S tier. We ranked that one. We don't have anything in the A tier yet. So moving into the B tier, we got Xenoblade. Here we got, here we go. We got Brain Age as well as Advance Wars and Pikmin. Nothing in the D tier yet, and in the F tier we got Pikmin. Let's get into it.
Okay.
Why don't we start with Kirby?
All right, let's do it. I think that's one you're leading with, right?
Yeah. So, break it down in some of the similar ways that you had broken things down before. I don't have any particular, like, one is worth more than the other, but I'll say this is an S tier.
I wrote down some notes about it, too. First game, 92.
Yeah, 92.
That's a long time ago.
And in addition to that, this series has been around for almost 30 years. Mm-hmm. Has come out on just about every single Nintendo platform, usually with multiple games. I think the only notable exception was the GameCube. It did get a racing game on the GameCube, but no like dedicated Kirby platformer. Most of the Kirby platformers in like the days of the GameCube were put onto the GBA and then onto the DS. So almost always a significant presence on every Nintendo platform since the NES.
Yeah, I found a library of 30 plus, I think I counted 39 games total. Over 30 years, like you're saying, games on virtually every console, some of them having multiple games. Estimated 40 million units sold. I think that, this is just a staple of Nintendo's consoles. Like, there's always Kirby games, regardless of the quality of each game individually. Like, there's a sheer quantity of them is impressive. There are quite a few.
And it's just fun, because Kirby's always, like, the experimental kind of game. They're like, right, this is a weird idea we want to do. Just make it a fucking Kirby.
Right. Things like Epic Yarn or Mass Attack didn't, like, actually... Well, I'm not sure about Mass Attack, but Epic Yarn doesn't actually start out as a Kirby game. They're like, okay, here's this weird game. What do we do with it? I'm like, okay, put Kirby in it. Why not? Speaking of Mass Attack, moving over to the sales, typically, like you were saying, like 39 games and like 40 million, these things typically sell more than a million, north of a million. Mass Attack is sadly the worst selling game that there are sales numbers
for. Mass Attack was so good, though.
And Mass Attack is really good. I love that game.
Mass Attack was really good.
What platform was that on?
DS. Original DS.
That's a surprise.
Like, I did buy that one, which was surprising.
Yeah, I think three of the best-reviewed games were Kirby... like you're saying, Canvas Curse, mm-hmm. Epic Yarn, Mass Attack, all had at least a high 80s, some of these with like low 90s scores. Very well-received. And some big-time sellers. Kirby Dream Land sold 5 million, Star Allies 4, Superstar Ultra sold 3 million, regardless of, I don't know if these are good.
Forgotten Land, I think, is getting close to 4 million.
I had a note on that one. It's the second best... It came out this year, Forgotten Land. It's the second best-selling and third best-reviewed. So, they're not peaking, but this is a high water mark for Kirby as a franchise, literally right now.
And then Star Allies, like you were saying, did really well as well. I'm sure that Forgotten Kingdom will eventually top the sales of Star Allies, because Forgotten Kingdom is so new. But we have got another Kirby game coming out in 4 or 5 months. I think February or March, they're porting over Return to Dreamland, which is a Wii game. They were the HD port treatment, bringing it over.
I mean, give me a port of Mass Attack. I would like to play that one again.
It'd be really great to see.
Get Mass Attack again. Come on, guys.
For sure.
Did we say who makes this game?
Oh, it's HAL. HAL Laboratories.
HAL Lab. They called them a second-party developer because they are so intertwined with Nintendo.
Yeah, it's sort of... And like Game Freak doesn't exactly have this relationship with Nintendo, but they're not like outright owned by Nintendo, but they're so closely associated with it, they hardly ever, if ever, make games on other platforms for other
companies. I didn't think they made anything other than Pokemon.
Game Freak?
Yeah.
Oh yeah, they. I don't have them offhand, but everyone. I think the last time they did was like 2018, a non-Pokemon game. But
I remember, I don't remember what title it was, but I do remember specifically there being a Game Freak game where we were like, what? They're making another... Wasn't it like a...
I'm Googling it now.
I thought it was like a Zelda-like action game or something.
Maybe,
wasn't
like,
it?
Like a Hembo the Badass Elephant or something?
I don't know. I'm probably off the plot here.
But anyway, like these games typically do pretty well. I think for sales, B. You do all right. You're above average.
Sales? Yeah. I'd even dare say that's an A. $40 million in the bank is really, really good.
Over 39 games.
That's spread out. That's fine. I mean, that's juice for the series going back to the 90s. That's just kind of they keep plugging and chugging. So they're doing good there, I think. So again, yeah, B, A, I think it's good.
Iconography. I think Kirby's very recognizable. Kirby sells a ton of merch, like hundreds of millions of dollars worth of merch, especially in Japan.
Get this. There is a successful anime and manga run that it had. That it made, I kid you not, $200 million in revenue from the series. It had over 100 episodes. And that's like not even merchandising. This guy merchandises like crazy.
Yep. Especially in Japan, Kirby is just all over the place. He's got his own cafe. He does kind of have a somewhat recognizable support cast. I mean, not even like reaching like levels of Mario.
I know a few ones like Meta Knight and DDD, just mostly because of...
Yeah, I mean...
Because of like Smash games and stuff.
Yeah, Meta Knight, DDD, end of list.
I don't know third.
But I think for iconography, I think you get an A there. I think most people would recognize Kirby.
I think an A as well.
Sort of like notoriety or prestige. I also give that an A. Almost always has multiple releases on every system, like we were saying. Really well supported by Nintendo. I think just on the Switch, there have been 4 or 5 Kirby games already, and they're always like promoted. There's always like some sort of presentation in Nintendo Direct, or Nintendo will drop a video and say, like, hey, here's a new Kirby thing coming.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Anything else about Kirby that you want to add?
Got a quick trivia question for you guys. How tall is Kirby?
Ooh. I'll say 2.5 feet.
2.5 feet?
Yeah, that's what I was going to do. I'd say 3.
3 feet? He's 8 inches tall.
Ooh, a little tiny little guy.
Yeah, he's a little dude.
Inches? Yep. That doesn't seem right.
Mm-hmm. That's exactly how tall he is, though.
That's weird.
My source, I believe, if I remember this correctly, was in one of the Smash games, listed the heights of all of the characters. So really what they're not telling you is that Samus is 3.5 feet tall.
Yeah. That makes sense.
Yeah. That's the only way it could be.
Yeah, that's the only way it's proportional.
True, yeah. that's all I had. That's everything I had in the bank there.
I figured, so I think Kirby easily goes into the A.
I have him as a high A.
Cool. There we go. That are the only A so far.
Yeah.
Okay, let's... Chibi-Robo?
Yeah, we'll do Chibi-Robo next, okay. You guys ever heard of Chibi-Robo?
Yep.
You have?
John has a game. Yeah,
there's a little amiibo of him right up there.
Oh, wow. You must be one of the only people in the world to own it.
Yep.
Okay.
Sure am.
It is made by Skip LTD, that make numerous DS and WiiWare games. They're most known for... Chibi-Robo, I guess you would say. There have been 5 total games. The first one came out in 2005 on the DS. The final one came out in 2015 called Chibi-Robo Ziplash, which I guess is what that amiibo you have is about.
Yeah, 3DS game.
Okay, so it's a platformer. The idea being that you're a little robot servant, and you have to go around performing tasks for a house of people, like cleaning shit up, basically. Like you're a Roomba. Basically, you pretend like if Bender was a Roomba.
God.
And you're trying, and you get rewarded in happiness points. And you have a little battery, and the idea is that you don't want your battery to run out, because if the battery runs out, then I guess that's game over.
You die.
And this is just from kind of watching gameplay of it. Like, I don't know shit about this. You own it. Did you play the originals?
No. No, I've only played a couple of Chibi-Robo games, and I never played the one on the GameCube. This is a fairly late GameCube game.
Don't worry, you will.
Yeah, we'll get to it. If it's affordable, otherwise I'll have to find some other less than ethical method of playing it. But Chibi-Robo is a franchise that I think they weren't quite sure what to do with it, because the GameCube one kind of received some cult status within Nintendo communities anyway. But after that, like, every other game was never quite what that game was. And, like, Ziplash was just a straight-up, like, action platformer. There was no, like, chores that we were doing around the house or anything. It was just here's your platforming level, and you use your little cord as a zip line or a grappling hook. Mm-hmm. Like a park patrol and photo finder. Like the game seemed to, the franchise kind of seemed to like this scattershot of ideas. Okay, I'm not sure what we do with this next. Let's just experiment with something different. Yep. Wes, you look like you're looking at the price.
Go yeah. On. For GameCube, yep. Chibi Robo, $349.
Yep.
$349.
Not surprised at all.
Is that the one that was a Walmart exclusive?
I think there was a DS one that was a Walmart exclusive.
Okay. So, truly abysmal sales as a franchise.
Yep.
The entire franchise did not sell 250,000 copies. Think about that. Entire franchise did not sell 250,000 copies.
Five games.
Five games. And they're making physical versions. That's why it's probably one of the rarest things, because some asshole actually bought this thing back in the day.
Well, I mean, I think I found a Japan import for $38.
Okay.
So, well, that actually is a good point. About the only place that does care about this franchise, even remotely, and even then they would say they don't care about this, is Japan. Only one of these games ever broke 100,000 units in sales, and it was the third game called Happy Richie.
Oh.
And that was exclusive to Japan. So more than half of the sales of this entire franchise is the third game that is only in Japan. Mm. That's what this game means to America. Like, fucking nothing. So negative, mixed to negative reviews as well, right? So you've got the one game, I read the reviews of it. It got like an 8 out of 10. And not even like a, oh, this is a bright, shining star of a game, but this is going to be a good franchise. It was just sort of like, it was fine, it was weird, but it's okay. We'll give it an 8 out of 10. And then it's a pretty precipitous drop-off after that, with the final games being regarded as a joke, getting 4 out of 10. Like, 4 out of 10, I don't even think they give 3 out of 10s. Like, I think that 4 out of 10 is about the lowest that you can get as a game, and still, like, you know, it's pathetic.
No, we won't get into it here, but I do think that Ziplash is unfairly maligned. I think it's fine. Anyway, but...
The last installment... Ziplash
yep.
is a 2D platformer. It has nothing to do with what the game does.
Right.
It sold 20,000 copies.
It's not good.
It sold 20,000 copies.
I got one of them.
Yeah, I mean, oh my God. So, like...
It's not great.
And, the game series is called Chibi Robo. You would think Chibi Robo would matter, like, as an individual. It is a thing, and, like, it doesn't mean shit. So here's the funniest thing about it. This is the, like... This game is in the trash bin of history, but... Like, the funniest thing about it was, like, I was trying to look up video game gameplay of this, and I just typed in, like, Chibi Robo on YouTube just to see what would come up. The only gameplay video I could find, well, not the only one, there's plenty of gameplay videos. The most viewed gameplay video had, I think, 26,000 views.
Hmm.
There was a video from a guy named Scott the Waz. I don't know if you've ever heard of him.
Yeah,
he's sort of like he makes, like, sketch comedy mixed with video game reviews.
Mm-hmm.
He has a 3 million view video dismantling Ziplash.
Mm.
Just destroying it as just a garbage game. Apparently, it had been a running joke for years leading up that it was his go-to. Like, we make fun of Reign of Fire. He makes fun of Ziplash.
We revere
Reign of Fire,
sir. The way that we revere Reign of Fire is the way that he despises Ziplash. Hmm. And I watched the entire 45-minute review of just vivisecting the game, explaining why it's such a fucking joke. And here's the thing that really got me about it, is that the developers, this company, Skip Ltd., like... were telling people, guilting people into buying it, saying that this is going to be the end of Chibi Robo if people don't buy it. And it's so clear that they just slapped this thing on to some. It could have been anything. This could have been a fucking Kirby game. This could have been another, like, Yoshi tongue game. Like, from what I saw, it's like you're just shooting this stupid. This game is absolute trash. And shame on you, John, for owning the Amiibo.
No, it's not a great game. Like, if I were to give it a number, like, I'd call it a 6 out of 10. It's not great, but I do think that it became like a punching bag. And it became like a meme for it to be a punching bag. There are far worse games on the 3DS than Chibi Robo Ziplash. There are far better games on the 3DS than Chibi Robo Ziplash. There are far better franchises in the Nintendo pantheon than Chibi Robo Ziplash. So let's break it down here. For longevity, this franchise is dead. This franchise did specifically because the developer is dead. Skip Limited might exist as like
it doesn't exist. Out. They closed after making this game,
right? But there's like
that is what happened to Skip Ltd. They are done. They do not exist. Their website has been taken down.
Right. There is like some sort of like shell listing, but like yes, they don't have a website. They don't have a functioning office. They don't have a staff. Like they functionally do not exist. They're done.
Yeah.
So like the franchise existed for 10 years and now is done. For sales, you get an F there. You never moved more than 100,000 units. That's
I'm amazed it even makes the list. Like that we're even talking about this in a tier ranking. It's so bad.
Like, well, there has to be stuff at the bottom because if we were just ranking the popular stuff, everything gets flooded to the top.
I'm shocked that they made 5 games too. Mm. That like this thing is a room temperature blue corpse on the ground, but they're still giving it CPR. Like, this game is done. It is dead. Like, why are they coming back to this?
It's, maybe it was somebody's nephew or something. Like, somebody who worked at Skip Limited, like, that was related to someone at Nintendo and just really loved making these games, so.
Could be. I mean, and again, like, that's the other thing, is that these aren't just, like, throwaway, like, DS or WiiWare games.
One of them was a DSiWare, I think.
I mean, yeah, I'm sure some, at least one of them are, but like
Photo Finder.
But like Ziplash, they made a physical thing. They made a fucking amiibo.
Sure did.
Like, what did they think this series was?
Maybe they were like trying to bank on like the rabid sort of need to acquire amiibo back when they were new. Like, if we put an amiibo in there, maybe people will buy it. Yeah. No, it didn't work out.
They need to add him to Smash.
Yeah, I think he's in there with like maybe a trophy or an assist, but yeah. You know.
I'm sorry, we're going through the list.
The iconography, like only
I got an F as everything.
Nintendo diehard fans will only recognize this. No one else will. But like, yes, Chibi Robo clearly goes in the F tier. It is a failed franchise. It's done.
It is a low F by my ranking. Yes.
Okay. Right. What's the
most popular video? Is on YouTube for anyone that's just like, I'd like to find out something about Chibi Robo, is a 45-minute takedown. You know, it is a hit piece through and through, and it's fucking hilarious. By the way,
it's okay.
If you can handle some cringe sketch comedy, it is great.
I've seen this guy's really stuff. I've seen his videos before. I've seen enough of him to know I don't need to watch this. Yeah. And we're not going to do a 45-minute takedown of Scott the Waz because that's a mean thing to do. Like, Chibi Robo isn't a good game. It's okay to voice your opinion like, hey, this isn't a good game. It's not a good franchise. I don't like it. It's not for me. But sort of like there were people who like actually, like, it was their job to work on this thing. Like,
not for long.
Another reason not to kick it while it's down. Like, don't be mean. Don't be mean. It feels like if you're gonna make a 45-minute takedown video, you're being mean.
That guy's kid doesn't go to college now.
Right. How are we gonna pay rent now? Anyway, let's move on to the
sorry, little Timmy. You're not gonna get that surgery.
Nobody bought Chibi Robo Ziplash. It was Scott the
Watson. No, son, you're going to die.
Splatoon. Let's move on to Splatoon.
Sure, let's do it.
So just breaking it down. Splatoon, developed internally by Nintendo, of course, published by Nintendo.
Nintendo EAD.
First game was out in 2015. Came out hot on the Wii U.
Sure did.
A console that moved 13 million units in its lifetime. There are copies of Animal Crossing that have sold more than the Wii U. Breath of the Wild has sold more than the Wii U.
Grand Theft Auto 3 sold more than the Wii U.
Probably in its first year. Probably its first month.
But it sold 5 million units first game. So one third, like more than a third of Wii U's had a copy of Splatoon.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. The most recent one just came out this year. So it's been, so it hasn't been going for 10 years yet, but it's a relatively new franchise. In terms of sales gangbusters, even on the Wii U, you're saying that 30% attach rate, more than 30% attach rate, especially in Japan. This is a big hit in the home market. Splatoon 2 sold excess of 13 million units. That came out the first year of the Switch, so you did not have a huge install base yet. I don't think there are official numbers for Splatoon 3 yet, because that's still a new game, came out back
the
in, what,
opening
August?
Weekend sales were the greatest in Japan's history, mm-hmm. outselling...
Pokemon Black and White, I think it was.
I think it was Black and White, yeah. It sold something in the neighborhood of like 4 million units opening mm-hmm. weekend, which is unbelievable. This game, however popular it is here in America, it's clearly like...
Oh yeah,
it's the real deal over there.
Yeah, getting into the iconography, like there's like merch and just sort of like decor. Like the game is like influential on Japanese fashion and music. Like this game is,
it has a distinct. It's that dual color palette, two mm-hmm. very contrasting color styles that pop very brightly, and then these adorable little squid guys that aren't mm-hmm. chibi style too. They're not like anime characters.
Mm-hmm.
They just look like little anthropomorphized squid people.
Yeah. Yeah, and there's not really any like main mascot. Like every game will have like the little like a musical artist or DJs or whatever, like who introduce like the stages. But it's not really like heavily based on a particular character. So you have your avatar and you sort of like dress it the way you want to. And there's all sorts of different pieces of gear and fashion that you can give it that will have different effects on the characters. But neither here nor there, it doesn't have like the one mascot icon yeah. of the series.
It's like a better version of Pikmin, where like Pikmin mm-hmm. are the big guys. I think it's like that they all just have these little squid characters.
Mm-hmm. So you're saying we should get like a Splatoon walking mobile game?
I don't know, but I think that would actually be really fun. A big thing that is fun in Pokemon Go is taking over and holding the mm-hmm. gyms. That's essentially what you would be doing. You could then have the gyms that would be filled. And as I understand...
You paint your turf by walking.
Exactly. I haven't played a lot of Splatoon, but you would put something in there, and it's like, is it the sniper guy that defends the base, or is it the roller guy that goes around in the area and gets like as much paint everywhere as possible?
I like being the roller.
Yeah.
My thing.
Yeah, oh, this is the easiest one to do.
You didn't even talk about what the game is. What is Splatoon?
Oh, Splatoon is sort of Nintendo's take on a online shooter. Except instead of like trying to rack up the most, it's a third-person shooter. Instead of trying to rack up the most kills, it's your gun. In addition to damaging the opposing team, in a 4-on-4 match, it will also like spread your paint, your color on your turf, your ink, and whoever is holding the most territory that is painted their color at the end of the match wins.
Yep.
And like they just have like these rotating matches. They only last 3 minutes, so it's easy to burn through a lot of them really quickly. And go with like a ranking system and assemble a squad with your friends. There's even like an esports
like
scene.
King of the Hill mode. Mm-hmm. They have like different tower defense modes and stuff like that.
They introduced a three-team mode in Splatoon 3. Kind of seems with mixed reception, let's say. But yeah, the initial formula, like the core idea, works really well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think my final... I think you covered everything pretty well here, but I would think the only thing I would say is it provides a new IP for them, mm-hmm. for Nintendo, which they desperately need. It fills a market for gaming that they don't really have, like mm-hmm. you're saying. This is sort of their shooter. This kind of is a shooter slash almost like a MOBA game for a lot of people to play in this sort of competitive environment, these quick matches, quick games.
And I think it like exemplifies on what they're really good at. So,
oh, and it's exclusive. It's in-house.
Yeah.
They own this.
There are things that like... over the years people are like oh, we want Nintendo to make like this sort of game. We want to see what Nintendo would be like making a shooter or making like a action game, things like this, something that's like, you know, in quotes mature, but that's not really what they're good at. What they're good at is taking something like, okay, there's an idea, but we're not going to do what everyone else is doing with that thing. We're going to do it our own way, and with that you get games like Splatoon, you get games like Breath of the Wild or Mario Odyssey. So like what they're good at is not what everyone else is doing, is like taking that thing and making it their own.
Absolutely.
But yeah, I think this one goes into the A tier.
Yeah, longevity, give it a C.
Yeah.
Sales, A. They're already doing really, really well. All these titles sell well. I would assume in 3 years, when they make another one, maybe on the next console, it'll also sell fucking crazy well. It gets good reviews, and yeah, I think it's got enough iconography. I give it a mid-A. I think it's a mid-A.
I agree.
So we have two A's now, huh?
Sure do. Yeah. There we go, filling up the tiers.
Yeah.
Paper Mario.
So I got Paper Mario. Again, a franchise that I really have no, I shouldn't say respect for. I never really played them personally, so they're not like a big thing for me.
Fuck you, Mario.
Yeah. So what do we got here? You have essentially, it kind of starts with the Mario, Super Mario, was it? RPG, the Star Super
Mario RPG.
They Legend call it
Seven Stars.
They call it Paper Mario, but they might as well just call it RPG Mario because it seems like every game is some kind of hybrid with an RPG system built into it. So there's six games in the series and one spinoff. First installment came in the year 2000 with the N64. They have this nice habit of releasing exactly one game on every console. So like the Wii U, the GameCube, the Switch. 3DS, I think, is the one that is either one of the two DSs.
Sort of, yeah. The 3DS got Sticker Star.
Got a Paper Mario game, so they're like, you get one. So we're not getting another one until the next console. I'll just, you know, that's a gospel or gossip. That's gospel. There's not going to be another.
I'd go with gospel now.
Paper Mario, and they'll make a Paper Mario on the Switch 64. I think is how this is gonna work.
The Super Switch, get it right.
Yeah. I don't know. I mean, if you want to tell me a bit about the game, as best as I can tell, it's basically a platformer with some RPG stuff. Or not a platformer. It's more like this puzzle game with RPG fighting in it.
So like you were saying, it sort of spins out of Mario RPG, and you get it to, what would you say, it was 2000, like early 2000. So you're looking at like kind of a late life N64 game. And on the N64, it is more of an RPG than it will become. And mostly because in the mid-2000s, 2002, 2003, we'll get a Game Boy Advance game called Mario & Luigi Superstar Saga. And that is a game series that's developed by developer Alpha Dream. And that will be much more of what you would think of as a Mario RPG, with like the sort of top-down areas and getting into fights and taking these turn-taking battles. And when that series will kind of take off, and we'll get multiple sequels across a bunch of different handheld systems, and it will kind of like put Paper Mario into this position, like, well, it'd be silly to have two RPG franchises, right? We do get another RPG with Paper Mario with a Thousand Year Door on the GameCube. I think that was kind of a sort of like a high watermark for the series. Super Paper Mario on Wii is much more of just a straight up like side-scrolling action platformer. And then it has a thing like where you're flipping your perspective, and the level changes when you change like the way that you're viewing the level, even though things still work pretty well in two dimensions. Then you get things like, what was it on Wii U? Color Splash, and then Origami King. So it's a series that they'll experiment with, and then we'll go back to like sort of like RPG battle adjacent type stuff, but it does become more of like this adventure game or like a vaguely action game where your objectives are like, okay, well let's figure out the sort of puzzles we need to solve in order to open up this area and get from point A to point B. Hmm. And will become less of an RPG as the series goes on.
Okay. Yeah, I see that.
With varying degrees of success.
Okay, yeah, varying degrees of success. So combined sales for the entire franchise are about 13 million, which for any other franchise, probably pretty good numbers. This thing has the word Mario in
it. Sure does.
Which makes it by far the worst performing Mario anything.
Mm.
Like, this is really bad in terms of sales for something that they keep making games on that just doesn't do anything.
The Switch Mario Party game by itself sold like 13 million units.
Oh, yeah. There's tons of different Mario titles that just one individual installment of another series is going to outsell this. Get this, Mario and Rabbids, the two games, the two titles of Mario's and Rabbids have sold more than all of Paper Mario. It's just not there.
Is that true?
Yeah.
Wow, that's surprising.
That one just came out.
I mean, with the first Mario and Rabbids, I would think people buying it thinking it's a different kind of Mario game.
Yeah, I think the first one sold.
Because that happened a lot.
And that is baffling that Kingdom Battle must have done a whole lot better than I thought.
Yeah.
Anyway, neither here nor there.
Well, the other thing you got to take into consideration is Kingdom Battle, since it is an Ubisoft game, did drop in price.
Yeah, it goes on sale a lot.
So, like, the cheapest we had it was, like, it hit, like, $19.99 and then just stayed there.
Hmm.
And then we would still get on sale cheaper.
Hmm.
So, that game, it's Ubisoft.
Yeah.
It got cheap. It went cheap. People saw Mario and they snagged it, not realizing it was a turn-take tactics combat game.
A very good one. But neither here nor
there. But yeah, I think, like, yeah, for their four-year-old kid, they're like, maybe not. But
yeah, point being, when you talk about other Mario franchises, you're talking about sales in the 100 millions.
Mm-hmm.
So the fact that this one ekes out 13 million is pretty... it's a letdown. It's a letdown. And the games themselves, it seems like the early ones got better reviews than the later ones, but... I mean, yeah, there's a pretty high floor for these. It seems like the most anyone ever... The lowest one still has, like, a high 7.
So, I want to go point by point here. For longevity, sure. I gave it a B. Been around since 2001. Makes an appearance on every console.
Yeah,
does,
yeah.
Does okay.
I gave it an A, but yeah, a B, A. I think that's reasonable.
We should, like, maybe have, like, to off-air come to some sort of agreement. Like, when it comes to longevity, what sort of window of time
merits... I think it's, like, X amount of years and X amount of consoles. Mm-hmm.
Right, and of course we have to take into consideration, like, Chibi-Robo. I mean, there was a game that came out in 2015, so pretty recent, but that franchise is dead.
Oh, right. So, I'm factoring in. I don't even consider that they released a game in 2015 as meaningful, since it sold 20,000 units. Like, they might as well have been... they've been a dead franchise for 3 years before then.
Hmm. Like, they're probably a dead franchise. Like, why did it become a franchise? It was very, very, yeah, very strange. Anyway, neither...
No, I think there isn't one that was, like, particularly amazing. It's not like one of the titles is responsible for 10 million of the 13 sales. They all did about the same. They all sold a couple million units apiece. Like,
yeah, for
they
for
did their thing.
Yeah, for sales, I went with a B. Like, it does okay.
Yeah,
it B. consistently sells north of a million. Kind of does Xenoblade numbers.
Yeah, thereabouts.
Iconography, I mean, it's fucking Mario.
Yeah, yeah, I mean, I gave it an A. I didn't give it an S. I just gave it an A because, like, most people that play a ton of Mario Kart probably have no idea that Paper Mario exists.
Mm. Yeah, I think A is totally fair there. The sort of, like, notoriety or prestige, like you were saying, like, I went with a C. It reviews pretty well most of the times. Has sort of some notable exceptions, like Sticker Star wasn't really all that well received, probably rightfully so. The franchise is kind of directionless. They're willing to, like, change it up a lot of the times, but it doesn't really have, like, a core identity. Maybe it will become sort of regain its core identity as an RPG now that the sort of Mario Luigi Superstar series is done. But yeah, it's just kind of average.
Yeah. I give it a high B.
Yeah. I went with a B as well.
Yeah. Just, yeah, really meh.
Yeah. I think maybe this game will benefit sort of consolidating the resources because of having, like, two RPG franchises for Mario, and I just combine it into one and kind of get back to basics. But we'll see. Because they'll do one on the Switch Cube. We'll definitely get another Paper Mario game. We'll see how it is.
Yeah.
But yeah.
Four more in the books, though, huh?
Oh, yeah.
And again, the content we create here, this is fantastic. This is what a tier list should be.
Right. This is what there's got to be, like, deliberation. You can't just, like, do these off the cuff. You need to have information.
Yeah. You got to sit there and be like, when I looked at my notes, I was like, I had Paper Mario was a low, and I'm like, I just can't do that. It's a high B. It's a high B. I felt there was so much genuine emotion packed in that moment where I was like, boom, control S, save this spreadsheet.
Wes, you approve? Everything look good here?
Yeah, it sounds good to me.
Cool. But yeah, we'll get into the next round of the next mini show. But next up is going to be the retro show. It's going to be a good one, guys. Oh,
yeah.
What an amazing show.
Lots of content.
Yeah, we're gonna talk about Luigi's Mansion.
Ooh.
We're going to talk about Wave Race Blue Storm. There's a Star Wars game as well that I'm not going to play. We're going to talk about Golden Sun. Golden Sun came out on the GBA. Wario Land 4. We got some PS2 games lined up.
SSX Tricky?
Yeah.
Something called Halo came out. Ooh. Halo Combat Evolved?
Never heard of it?
News to me, man.
No. SSX Tricky came out? Oh, yeah. I played the shit out of that game.
Mm-hmm. It's going to be a good time.
That was a good one.
But yeah, oh, and that there Harry Potter movie.
Yeah, huh? Would you believe it? That satanic thing has corrupted all of the children of America.
Sure has. They're all just going around casting spells now.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if I'm excited for this Weird Al Yankovic movie or not.
Oh, because of Daniel Radcliffe.
Yeah, yeah, like, that's why I'm bringing this up. That's why I'm bringing this up, because that popped in my head. But yeah, I'm on board for it. Let's see how this is.
Okay.
I'm seeing how involved Weird Al himself is in it gives me optimism. Makes me think it could be good.
Mm-hmm. It'd be funny if I don't know much about the movie, but it'd be funny if just like Weird Al writing fan fiction about himself. Like, it's not actually about his life.
It's
about
none of it's true.
It's like, him like making up a story where he is the main character.
Could be. Yeah, it could be just telling like a highly dramatized version of his life. Mm.
I hope so, because that's Weird Al style. That'd be great. So,
I'm thinking like Confessions of a Dangerous Mind style. Like he's a singer, and then there's also like a fucking like astronaut or something.
Well,
he helped fake the moon landing.
God. I know later in life there were a bunch of personal tragedies that did befall him. Mm. But I remember when they did when VH1 Behind the Music was still a thing, they did one about him, and you could tell that they were just struggling to come up with anything remotely like controversial or you know, it's like if they're doing like a hair metal band, it's like, yeah, you know, he's technically dead for a minute. We had to overdose him in the heart to bring him back to life, and it's like Weird Al, it's like, well, none of his albums didn't sell that well. And it's like,
the worst thing that ever happened to him was Michael Jackson died.
Yeah, Coolio said some unkind things about his cover.
How dare he? How dare he?
So
over the line, Coolio.
So I don't know. Yeah, I don't even know what they're going to do. If this is going to be like some kind of telling of the life of Weird Al. As I recall, there wasn't like a lot of major dramatic moments. They all happened when, like, you know, I think the death of his parents and stuff like that happened later.
Mm.
But anyway, that's neither here nor there. Like, we'll see what happens with this movie.
Very good. No, that's it. That's the end. Till next time.
So long.